Hello and welcome to Revolutionary Woman. My name is Tess Silverman. Women around the world are constantly creating ways to make a difference in their communities, and today's guest is no exception. Grace Robinson is a Java champion and product manager at IBM, having been at IBM since graduating from university with a degree in biology. Grace enjoys bringing a varied perspective to her projects and using her knowledge of biological systems to simplify complex software patterns. Previously, as a developer advocate for 8 years, Grace built POCs, demos, sample applications, and tutorials. Now, as product manager for the dev experience of IBM's Java portfolio, she's combining her experience and passion for development with her MBA and leadership skills to help drive the strategy and future direction of IBM's Java tools. Hi, Grace. Welcome to Revolutionary Women. How are you this afternoon?
Hi, Tess. Thank you so much for having me on. I am great, thank you. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Okay, so let's get started. I have a lot of questions. So, So you grew up in Hampshire in the UK. Yep. What was it like growing up in Hampshire?
It's a pretty great place in the world to grow up. So we're on the coast in the south of England, pretty mild weather, especially compared to sort of the north of the country and up to Scotland. Mm. It's gorgeous in terms of we've got some amazing national parks for sort of exploring, wandering. And I was lucky enough to be able to explore those a lot as a kid. So I loved it. And I'm lucky that I've got a lot of family around. So very much enjoy spending time with them and just hanging out and having a nice time.
Are they still all in Hampshire?
A lot, yeah. I have a large family, I'd say, for UK standards. I'm sure not large for a lot of international listeners. But I've got about 30 first cousins.
Wow. So, that is a lot.
It's okay. Large. Yeah.
Are you sure you're not Filipino?
Unfortunately, no Filipino in there. I thought that would be quite fun. It's a lot. So, and I was lucky that I grew up with a lot of them nearby. So
kind
of a lot like, you know, older brothers and sisters, really. Some of my oldest cousins would go and, you know, pick me up from nursery and take me home. So, very much a big part of my life.
That's awesome. I love that. That's hysterical. Okay. So I read that you went to study biology and went to university and got a degree for it. Were your parents, in science as well? Were they, you know, academics?
So my mum's a teacher, primary school teacher, but focused on geography in terms of her degree. And then my dad's a civil engineer. So he is definitely sciencey, engineering-y, mathsy. Wow. And I take a lot of my characteristics after him in terms of very logical thinker. I like solving problems. And my mum's a big fan of the natural environment and teaching us all about sort of, you know, we'd go to, you know, the Alps in France, for example, and she'd be pointing out scree and teaching us the geographical names of the different parts of the mountain. And so I guess it's a kind of an influence from both of them there in terms of like a love of the natural world and wanting to understand it further in terms of how it works.
That's so
that
cool.
Kind of led me into that biology.
Huh. Yeah. I love that your mom like would point out the geographical things to you while on vacation.
It was like a pop quiz, honestly.
Really? Oh my gosh, I would probably fail. I'm not very good with geography.
I have to say, it's not my best subject either. So definitely not my forte.
That's funny. Okay, so you went from biology to technology. So can you tell me when that happened and what made you choose technology over science? I mean, was having a father who was an engineer influence you to go into tech?
Yeah, I would say to an extent. The fact that I had a father who, and really both parents who encouraged me to pursue whatever I was interested in. Mm-hmm. I never had any real awareness when I was younger that, you know, science, maths, those kind of subjects were male or kind of for boys. Hmm. So I was really lucky that I went to an all-girls school that was actually a science specialist. Oh. So it was the complete opposite for me. We were all very much encouraged to do science. And there wasn't really any of that, bias towards it not being for girls.
Wow.
So I was very fortunate that way that I had the positive influences both in my home life and at school as well. And yeah, I essentially was interested in all things science, nature, problem solving, logic. And I was able to do sort of basic computer at school. We had IT, but it was really, it wasn't very advanced when I was at school. It was really, this is Excel. This is how you use Excel. This is a database. This is how you use Access. It didn't really go into actual programming. So I ended up pursuing that in my free time.
Okay.
Because I wasn't really able to pursue that in school and then continue to take the sciences. And yeah, I chose to go into biology at uni. I was, as I told you, like interested in nature, but also how it works, and thought, hey, why not? I'll be the next David Attenborough. But didn't quite go down that way.
Right.
But I ended up doing a bit of programming actually at uni, which was really interesting as part of my biology degree.
So
I was using, I know the two don't really necessarily, people don't think of them together.
Right.
But using Python and R to model sort of biological simulations to be able to sort of experiment with, okay, what would this happen if we were in the natural world? And then gaining a better understanding using coding and using programming to be able to help us understand biology better.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was through that that I started to realize, actually, I think I prefer the coding to the biology. So maybe I should do that in a career.
So you are currently a product manager for IBM. But prior to that, you were a software engineer, as you mentioned.
Yep.
So what was it about coding that you loved?
I loved the fact that I'm not the most creative person in terms of being able to express myself through art, for example. I've got friends who are the most amazing, you know, painters, drawers, and I was always jealous of them being able to take what they had in their head and make it into something beautiful on, say, a piece of paper or artwork. And for me, coding is a way that I can do that in a more, like, in a way in which it allows me to express that creativity, because it allows me to be able to solve problems in a creative way. I love the fact that, you know, I don't have to necessarily be an amazing drawer. I can use these sort of templates and these languages and these sort of libraries to be able to put together something that's creative in its own way, just through a computer. So it kind of allows, I love the fact that it allows people to be able to express that creativity and to be able to use it to solve problems in a novel and innovative way. Okay. I think that's amazing.
I read part of your aha moment was when you posed a question to yourself, which was, why would someone select my talk? Or even if I was selected, why would a developer come to my talk over the 3, 4, 5 and other talks that we'd be running at the same time? Can you share more about that? I thought that was an interesting thing for you to think about.
I guess so, for some context, when I came into IBM as a graduate, I was hired into the software engineering department for Java. And at the time, they were forming a team of developer advocates. So I ended up becoming a developer advocate. So part of my role as a developer advocate was to talk at international conferences and help teach people about our technologies and our products and our open source software. And yeah, it was kind of a situation where I joined from biology. You know, I came into this team, I didn't even know what Java was, let alone how to, you know, how I could possibly present on a stage about Java technologies. So it was kind of this question that I posed of, okay, if I'm going to start submitting to conferences after, bear in mind, I'd had a bit of time to at least get my head around Java and start using it and start getting familiar with it through tuition and learning online courses and starting to make things like Pac-Man and then starting to do our guides and helping on sort of the education material written online. So at this point, I'd gotten comfortable with Java. I'd gotten comfortable with sort of the technologies that we were working on within my department. I was like, okay, if I'm going to start actually doing this part of the job where I'm sort of submitting to conferences, what am I going to speak about? Because, you know, this language is older than I am.
Right.
Why would someone possibly go to my talk over someone who's, say, you know, double my age, been working with Java since they were, you know, since Java had been sort of thought of, versus me, who's not even old enough to know the start of Java. Yeah, it was this question of, I felt this real imposter syndrome of, I don't know, what could I possibly bring that would be helpful to developers?
Okay.
And it's kind of that moment that I was like, okay, the only reason that someone would come to my talk over someone else's, because often at conferences, when you go, you know, there's at least 3, 4, sometimes even 10 tracks mm-hmm. with multiple talks all going on at the same time.
Right.
So
yes.
really it's, you know, you're almost competing against these other talks to try and get attendees to come to yours right. instead of someone else's.
Right.
So why would they come to mine? Right. And it was kind of this realization of, well, what do I bring to the table that's unique and useful and interesting that I could combine into a talk?
Mm-hmm.
And I realized actually it was exactly the concerns I'd had that I could use to be interesting and to be different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fact that I didn't do a computer science degree, the fact that I wasn't old enough to know the start of Java, you know, all mm-hmm. of these factors make me different to right. other people who might be presenting.
Right.
So okay. I kind of had this realization of maybe I could combine my biological background
uh-huh.
with my love of storytelling, with my love of solving problems, and the fact that I'm new to Java to mm-hmm. be able to present some of these methodologies and architectures and technologies in a different way
mm-hmm.
to help people.
Okay.
And yeah, that was my big aha moment that really allowed me to sort of step onto the stage, so to speak.
That's so cool. Okay, so let's get into that. Because can you share with me your first talk about beehives and, you know, and how you were able to combine that with tech? I thought it was fascinating, but please, yeah. you know, share that with me.
You mean bees and technology are not an automatic mixture? I can't believe it. Yeah, it was definitely, I'm saying, you know, it's funny because, you know, I mentioned I've got absolutely no drawing skills. If anyone has ever seen that presentation, you'll see some fabulous cartoon bees on my presentation slides. They were not drawn by me. I claim absolutely no credit to them. That was my mum, who is one of those people who is an amazing like artist, cartoonist, and I was very fortunate that I got her to do my slides. So it's always funny when I think back and, you know, reflecting on the fact that coding and software allows me to express my creativity. I used her creativity for that talk.
Right.
So it was essentially, at the time I was looking at reactive systems when I first joined in the advocacy team. And I was fortunate that reactive systems were kind of just taking off within and becoming popular within sort of the Java ecosystem. And it gave me an advantage that, you know, it doesn't matter that I don't know all of Java mm-hmm. and all of the history of Java. Mm-hmm. I know this part. I know mm-hmm. reactive systems, and I know how it can be applied to Java applications. So I thought, well, why don't I do a talk about that?
Okay.
But reactive systems is a very abstract kind of concept level methodology. And that's often the problem in software engineering. Less problem, more challenge.
Mm-hmm.
In that it can be sometimes difficult for people to really get their heads around a concept when a lot of concepts in software engineering are very abstract mm-hmm. and don't necessarily have concrete things that you can kind of see or put kind of like an image to.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, well, why don't I do an analogy? Why don't I pick an analogy in biology that would help to explain the concept in this software architecture and help developers to understand it easier, but also to have an analogy to refer back to so that it helps them to remember it as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's all well and good going to a conference talk, but if you don't remember what they were saying afterwards, it's not going to be much use.
Right.
Yeah. So, so I ended up thinking about, okay, what's the message I'm trying to get across for reactive? What am I trying to teach people? What am I trying to help developers understand about it?
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I thought about the reactive manifesto and the different characteristics within that. And actually, the characteristics within the reactive manifesto, things like resiliency and reactiveness and being message driven, really relate a lot to how beehives work in terms of the social structure of bees within that beehive.
Mm.
And I kind of saw this analogy between these two kind of what most people would think of as very unrelated matters. To me, seemed like a fantastic analogy to be able to use. So, I was looking at and teaching people how bees can really help us in trying to architect our applications to be more cloud native.
That's really interesting, because especially for a layperson like me, you know, who mm-hmm. doesn't really understand a lot of the things that my husband talks about, because he's in the same background as you, and
yep.
half of the time it's just like I'll go to talks and I'm like, oh, okay, yep, all right, I don't know, but I'm here. I was like, and It's interesting because when you actually combined it with something that other people can relate to, you know, who are not in the tech sector, that makes sense, you know, because I'm like, oh, okay, I know about beehives and how they, you know, bees create their own structures and how it affects the rest of their bees and how they can, you know, generate their own form of architecture, as you said. It's really, really interesting. So I'm like, how cool is that? So, okay, how did, so how did that land? That was your first talk. How did that land with the audience?
Really, really well. So this is the first time I've been presenting. It was at an international conference in Sweden.
How cool.
And I remember turning up and the conference organizer was like, okay, don't freak out, but this is the room you're going to be presenting in. And it was the keynote stage with two massive screens, like live streaming my face behind me. Honestly,
whoa.
I was like, if I can do this, I can do anything.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was pretty incredible. And yeah, Jay Focus is the conference. If anyone's interested, fantastic conference.
Yes. We were there 2 years ago.
Definitely recommend.
Yeah.
Yes.
We were there 2 years
fantastic,
ago.
Fantastic developer community there.
That's so cool.
Oh yeah, my gosh. It landed really well. And I ended up giving it at a lot more conferences all around the world and actually expanding my talk to different biological analogies. Mm. So comparing cells, for example, with containers in software architecture, looking at the immune system in the body and how we can learn from that for security of our applications.
Wow.
So, it's kind of expanded from there. So it's been really fun to be able to combine my two passions of biology and tech to be able to help people understand these really abstract, complex sort of architectures and methodologies and technologies.
That is very cool. And I think that's so amazing that you're able to like combine the two, your two loves, like you said. What does your role now entail as a product manager?
Mm-hmm. So this is pretty new for me. I've only been in the role for a few months now, full time. But the nice part about the product management role I've gone into is I'm still helping developers, which I love. So I get to combine my love of software engineering and kind of my background in understanding what software developers go through on the day-to-day in terms of developing enterprise Java applications. Mm-hmm. But now I get to help in kind of spearheading that strategy for our developer experience and helping to hopefully make that developer experience better.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm now working as a product manager for the developer experience tools that we have within our Java portfolio here at IBM.
Okay. So do you still get to travel and do talks?
Yes, awesome. Which I'm very fortunate to be able to do.
That's great.
So I will actually be going back to JFocus. So if anyone's going to be there, I will be there.
That's awesome.
Looking forward to hopefully meeting some people.
That's awesome. Okay, so now this industry has a lot of women tech already, women in technology. Is it oversaturated or is there room for more?
Always room for more.
Okay.
And I would say that about any characteristic that you might have that might make you different, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I think if we can make our industry as diverse as possible, as inclusive as possible, we're only going to make better products. We're going to make better software. We're going to make better products that better suit our individual users. I think we've taken big leaps forward. Mm-hmm. Focusing specifically on the female in tech here, we've taken a big leap forward in terms of encouraging more women into the sector.
Right.
But I think there's most definitely still room for more because it is still a male-dominated industry, especially at the developer level. I think it's wonderful that we have a lot of other roles like product management, like marketing, like people management, like there's so many other roles in tech, but I think, and they all play a really important part. And I think there's a lot more in terms of gender parity in those alternative roles within tech. But I think especially at the developer level, there is still a big bias on mostly male dominated within our industry. So I think if we can do more to encourage more female engineers, more female software developers, as I said, we're only going to create better software because we all think in different ways. We all bring different things to the table. Like, for example, I saw a couple of examples of this, specifically in software, where I don't know if you remember right back to when Apple originally produced their health app. And they announced it and they were like, oh, this is where you can record all of your health data and it will help you to understand, you know, is there anything that you need to be concerned about? Are there any potential links that you can make that we can help to potentially pre-diagnose a particular condition or whatever it might be? And they missed a huge factor in what health data they were collecting because they were a male-dominated engineering team. They'd completely forgotten to think about the female sort of cycle in terms of periods and that kind of thing. And they just hadn't thought to include that. And that's often a huge symptom or a huge sign of a potential diagnosis, illness, a condition, whatever it might be. And it was just completely missing from the application. and other ones, for example, like where you have forms where there's a word, a character limit on the, let's say like the surname box, for example. You know, it might have been designed by engineers in a particular country where it's really common to have a short surname. But for example, in Spanish communities, it's really common to combine surnames. So you end up with a much longer surname that goes past the character limit. So again, you know, by having this diversity, we can actually better suit the needs of our individual users and hopefully make better products. So I would definitely say there's more to be done. And I think we'll continue improving the industry as a community so that we can then improve the software that we make.
I thank you for that. Okay, so who would you credit for where you are now?
Oh, okay. There are quite a few people I'd credit in terms of just supporting me in different ways and at different stages in my career and life so far. One of which is definitely my parents. As I've mentioned before, they've always encouraged me to pursue my interests and passions and encourage really critical skills for the sort of job roles I've gone into, things like critical thinking and just generally great soft skills from a very early age. As I've sort of grown up and gotten married, my husband, he's always been a huge supporter and hugely encouraged me to pursue my work goals and supported me in those times where I might have been burnt out or unsure on sort of major life or career decisions. And I'm really fortunate that I have someone who is my better half and definitely my equal and treats me with respect and love. So I'm very fortunate that way. But outside of sort of home life, I've had some fantastic managers. I've been very lucky to have had very supportive managers who really were when I needed to have space. You know, say there was things going on in my personal life, they gave me space. But when there wasn't, and they sort of encouraged me to continue to stretch myself and sort of pursue career goals and really encouraged me to continue to develop myself and not lose sight of sort of where I wanted my career to go and what my interests were. And one in particular that springs to mind in terms of an individual was I was very fortunate at university that we had a mentorship program where they invited previous alumni from the university to come and mentor current students. And I was lucky that I knew I was going to a job in IBM at the time. I was in my final year. And I was given a mentor who actually had worked in tech before. And she was, honestly, she taught me advice that would have taken me years to learn about how to balance work and life and really how to make the most out of opportunities at work before even entering the world of work. So it was invaluable to be able to have those insights and to have that guidance even before I stepped into my graduate role.
That's awesome. So what's next for Grace?
What's next for me? Well, as I said, I've just started in product management, so really excited to see where that takes me. Hopefully going to continue making an impact for developers making use of our Java products. I really want to see about how I can continue to sort of improve my leadership skills and look to really learn from some of the activities in product management that I wouldn't necessarily have been doing as a developer advocate. So strategy, interacting with our sales, that kind of thing, and looking to maybe, step a bit more into leadership. But also hopefully to continue being a role model. As well as, you know, my product management role, I'm also a volunteer in the local community. as a STEM ambassador. Mm-hmm. So in the UK, we have this scheme called STEM Ambassadors, and it's essentially a scheme that allows us to connect with local schools, or it might be local community groups like Brownies or Scouts or whatever it might be. And so I regularly volunteer where I go and help them with career interviews, or I help give them career discussions on STEM careers. And I find it really fulfilling to be able to go in and just give them advice and to sort of answer any questions they might have on what it's like, you know, stepping out of school and into the working world. Right. So, amazing. Hopefully to continue that.
I love that, because then you're actually like giving them, you know, you're sharing your experience with them. Maybe not your experience, but at least how you are in that world, so they can be prepared. And hopefully if they are, you know, then they can say, oh, well, I met this, you know, this software engineer and talking about tech, and maybe I want to go into that. That's awesome.
Precisely.
I think
if we're going to encourage more diversity in our industry, we need to start young, mm-hmm. because, you know, kids these days have to make decisions on what subjects am I going to study? What am I going to pursue at university quite early on?
Right.
Or even, you know, if they're not going into university, what apprenticeship or job am I going to get?
Right.
Industry am I going to go into?
Yeah.
So if we're not influencing them when they're at school, then we've got very little chance of them considering going into an industry that they might have a bias against.
Right.
So it's nice to be able to showcase, you know, software engineering isn't just I'm in a dark room with my hoodie up coding away. You know, there's lots more to software engineering, and there's lots of roles in software engineering that aren't just being a software engineer. So it's nice to be able to educate them about that, and hopefully show role models that perhaps don't fit that typical stereotype that they might have in their head.
I love that. What is one thing that the people would be surprised to learn about you?
Oh, okay. Let's do something outside of work, because I always find that more interesting.
Yeah.
So I guess some people would be surprised to learn that I love being active. Mm-hmm. Absolutely love being active outside of work. Mm-hmm. In work as well, we have a fantastic community here at IBM in the office I work in, where we have regular 5Ks and couch to 5K, and there's like football clubs and everything. And it's honestly a fantastic community. But outside of work, I love trying different sports. So throughout my sort of life, I've tried the stereotypical British sports, so netball being one of them. I know it's kind of a rogue sport in the USA. It's not really picked up. But
What is that?
Netball. It's a bit like basketball, but netball is a predominantly female sport, and it's played on a smaller court. And you can't bounce the ball and move. You have to pass it a lot.
Okay.
Really popular in England and the Commonwealth, I would say, but not so popular in the USA.
Okay.
But it's getting there. It's getting there. But
okay.
I enjoy playing sort of random sports. So I've done ultimate frisbee, rugby, martial arts, netball, lots of different sports. But my recent favorite at the moment, which I've been playing for a club for, is korfball, which is a fun Dutch sport. And would definitely recommend, if anyone's got a korfball club near them, giving it a go.
I never would have known about that. Thank you.
Yeah,
okay.
I am a korfball player and enjoying it so far.
That's so cool. Okay. So if anyone wanted to know more about you and your work, how would they go about it?
Yeah, I'm active on social channels, especially things like LinkedIn. So if anyone wants to learn more about it, they can connect with me or follow me on LinkedIn, for example. Otherwise, I'm writing blogs and things on IBM Developer and Fuji, which are some Java and IBM communities that you can access online. So feel free to take a look at some of my work there. And I think you can follow on communities like Fuji. I think you can follow authors, so you can check out any publications I'm putting there.
Okay.
But apart from that, if you're interested in any of the open source technologies we work on within IBM, many of them are open source and available on GitHub. So do reach out and I can send you links and you can get involved that way.
Great. Is there anything you'd like to say to my listeners?
I would say that hopefully hearing my journey about sort of going from biology to tech and sort of combining my passions together really opens your eyes perhaps to ways in which you could combine your passions to help in your own careers, whether it be through, presenting on stage like I did, or some other way. I think it's wonderful to be able to combine them to enable that innovation and to just bring something different, even if it's just in the way a different, you know, a team thinks or a team works. I'd say that diversity helps us to be better teams in general, even if it's outside of software engineering. So I encourage you to take a think about how you could maybe bring some of your passions in to your own job roles and perhaps how it could make your team better.
I love it. So if you had one thing to change that you wish you had done years ago, what would it be?
It would probably be prioritizing my personal development, really with the same intention and structure that I applied to my professional goals. Because I think it's something that a lot of people overlook. Really early on, I was very focused on, you know, delivery and outcomes, and did I do what I was supposed to do in terms of what my team was expecting of me that year? And I think I've come to understand that areas like in growth of areas of like think self-awareness, emotional intelligence, things like mindset, they can have a really profound impact on how I conduct myself at work and how I lead, how I collaborate, how I navigate challenges. And I think if I'd started investing a lot more in those particular areas sooner, so more of those sort of softer skills through maybe things like coaching or reflection or even just carving out some time just to pause and learn from my experiences, I think I would have grown a lot faster, but also more sustainably and confidently. Because, you know, you can gain technical skills, but if you don't have the confidence, for example, to back it up or to know that, you know, what you've delivered in terms of code or whatever it might be is pretty good. Then I think often it can be the case that you become overlooked or someone else's opinion is louder. And I think if you can focus on things like self-awareness and emotional intelligence and having the right mindset at work, it can make a huge difference to your success, your productivity, your happiness in your career. So yeah, I think if I could change one thing, it would have been focusing more on that personal development sooner.
Okay. And my last question is, if you could go back in time, what advice would you give your younger self?
This is a popular question. And I think the first thing is, I think there's probably two main things for this, two key pieces of advice that I try and pass on in my volunteering to younger students as well. One is, everyone feels imposter syndrome. Don't think it's just you. Many people come into the world of work and, you know, you might have done a computer science degree and be coming into a computer science role, but you might still feel imposter syndrome. But the important thing is to recognize that it's not just you. Everyone feels it at some point in certain circumstances or in certain scenarios with certain people. So it's about recognizing that that feeling of imposter syndrome and starting to get comfortable being uncomfortable. Because it's only when we're uncomfortable that we're actually able to grow and develop and stretch ourselves and sort of become better. It might be better software engineers or it might just be better people. But really it's about being uncomfortable and being okay with that. And that's how you allow yourself to grow and develop and to continue sort of working on yourself. So I think that's the first thing is don't worry too much if you're feeling that imposter syndrome. Talk to people, talk to mentors, and you'll very quickly realize that everyone's felt it at some point or another. And I think the second thing is remain curious, especially in the tech industry. A lot of people come into this industry and are like, you know, even if you've done a computer science degree, there's always things to learn. And so to be able to continue working in this industry and being happy, I think it's important that we remain curious so that we remain wanting to learn about those new innovations, those new technologies. The tech industry moves at such a rapid pace. There's always new technologies and frameworks and languages all the time to skill up on. So really it's about setting yourself into the right mindset to be open to those changes and to be able to take advantage of them to improve both yourself and to impact through your role. So remaining curious and accepting that imposter syndrome, those are probably the two main things.
Awesome. Well, Grace, thank you so much for sharing your life with me and your work. And I still love that whole, you know, beehive talk that you did. I think that was that's incredible, you know, because I never would have thought of like, oh, wait, yeah, if they actually think about it, you know, it's Yeah, you could combine the two, and it makes sense. A real life situation, and then, you know, something abstract, you know, it's like, oh, how cool is that? So
totally. I mean, it's amazing how much influence the natural system has nowadays on technology. Mm. You know, if you start taking a look at algorithms, for example, so many algorithms have their basis in, like, the natural world. So it might be how ants are efficiently moving food across to their home, or it's just incredible watching how we can, you know, evolution has had millennia to get this right. So how can we learn from that and apply it in software and tech?
So
there's some really cool areas of research in that kind of crossover.
That I love. Okay. Well, thank you again for sharing your life and your work and your thoughts with me. And, you know, I can't wait to, like, you know, actually see you at a talk one day, because I haven't been able to do that. So hopefully one of these days I'll get to, you know, either JFocus or another conference. But I really appreciate
it. That would be wonderful.
Yeah, I really appreciate everything you've shared. And I hope whoever listens to this, you know, will think twice about, oh, maybe there's something that will really, like, that I've been working on, but I'm not sure how to combine it so I can, you know, somehow make sense of how to relate it to someone else. So, but that's awesome. Well, thank you so much again. And
thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. And I look forward to catching up with you soon. Well, have a good day and I'll talk to you soon. Okay.
Thanks. You too. Bye-bye.
That's our show for today. I've posted more information about Grace Robinson on RevWoman.com. I will be taking a break for the holidays, but please tune back in on Thursday, January 8th to hear about our next Revolutionary Woman. You can listen to Revolutionary Woman on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. Thank you for listening. Happy holidays and Happy New Year. Just a little note. I've launched a Patreon account to support the show. All proceeds will go to producing and editing the episodes to give my poor husband a break from being my personal IT and production department. He wrote this. The address is patreon.com/revwoman.